Chapter 14, These Violent Delights. Rabe took in the situation so calmly that Padme wondered if she was used to interrupting personal moments. Which, she realized after a moment of thought, she probably was, if Queen Amidala and Captain Kenobi had been together for more than a decade. Padme herself had never had much privacy from her handmaidens, even after she had finished her last term as queen and had only 3 handmaidens to answer to, instead of a dozen. Rabe gave them a moment to compose themselves, her gaze flicking curiously between the 3 of them, before she said, "Her Royal Highness's compliments, and she wishes to inform you that your advice about the Republic Flotilla's probable route back to Coruscant was correct. The First Fleet intercepted them in the Gaius system and recovered Prince Consort Bail Organa and Viceroy Gunray. The flotilla was completely destroyed." All 3 of them winced, which made Rabe raise an eyebrow. In a carefully neutral voice, she said, "It's fleet policy to take senior enemy officers prisoner when possible. The fleet captured several captains and 1 Jedi Knight. As there is a Republic space station in that system, they should be able to recover any escape pods and tender assistance to the survivors, now that the First Fleet has left Gaius." "1 Jedi?" Padme said, surprised. "I thought there were more. Surely they weren't all killed in the attack." Rabe's mouth compressed into a thin line, and she exchanged a look with the other handmaiden, who Padme thought was called Kine. "Records captured from the Republic flagship indicate that the Jedi cruiser left the flotilla in another system, where it could take a straight route back to Coruscant through neutral space and Republic space. Military convoys are forbidden to transit neutral space, but Jedi ships are permitted," she explained.
"It's the same in our universe," Obi-Wan said.
Rabe nodded. "Unfortunately, that also means our ships can't pursue. By now, they've probably reached the core worlds." Her fingers flexed, the only outward sign of her anger. Unspoken was the likelihood that Captain Kenobi was now far out of the Confederacy's reach, unless Chancellor Dooku condescended to negotiate with Amidala for his release.
"I'm sorry," Obi-Wan murmured.
Anakin still looked rattled, but he asked, "Who's the knight the First Fleet captured?" Kine answered, with the light accent of the Southern Isles to her soft voice. "Anatolan, Kit Fisto?" She nodded. "That's it. There were 2 others, but Admiral Rioni wasn't able to identify whether they died on the Trade Federation ships or made it to the escape pods, and the fleet didn't want to linger in the system to make certain."
"Who?"
She shook her head. "I don't know."
"All the Masters would have gone with the cruiser," Obi-Wan said quietly, looking at Anakin. "Including Plo Koon and his Padawan. That kind of trial will involve the entire council, and it won't be done via hologram, if there's any way to avoid it. It would be very unlikely for Ahsoka to have been on one of those ships."
Anakin nodded, biting his lip. Padme reached for him, but he shifted aside, avoiding her hand. Rabe considered them thoughtfully, making Padme wonder how much of the conversation she had overheard. "Her Royal Highness has decided to grant you your request to speak to Masters Koth and Unduli," she said. "Kine will take you now. You can bring your weapons, but you'll have to leave them outside the room when you're speaking to them, and you'll be under guard the entire time.
Anakin and Obi-Wan glanced at each other, something wordless passing between them. Then Obi-Wan nodded gravely and said, "Very well. We agree to your terms."
"Should I come too?" Padme asked. "It might help convince them."
"I wanted to talk to you, actually," Rabe said. Padme looked at her in surprise, but the other woman's gaze was steady and calm. "All right," she said, waving off Anakin's initial protest and wondering what it was about. Rabe waited until Kine and the Jedi had gone before she said anything, moving thoughtfully around the sitting room. With another raised eyebrow after she saw the broken glass in the waste bin, and making tea. Padme sat stiffly on the couch, wondering if she ought to offer to help, but before she had made up her mind, Rabe had finished and came back with the tea tray, pausing for an instant to fuss over the arrangement of the pot and silver-chased glasses.
"Is Her Highness all right?" Padme asked.
Rabe hesitated for a moment, one hand resting on the handle of the teapot.
"Not really," she said. "How would you be?"
"I was devastated," Padme said.
Rabe looked at her in surprise. "Your men?" she asked, tilting her head towards the door, and making Padme wonder exactly how much she had overheard before any of them noticed her.
"Anakin was missing in action for 2 months," Padme said. "The war... our war. He was reported dead later, but he... came back."
Rabe nodded in understanding.
"Well, I hope Her Majesty is as lucky as you," she said. She poured them both tea, then passed a cup to Padme before saying, "Are you all right?"
"What?"
"If Palpatine laid a hand on you, he'll lose it and his position," Rabe said. As Padme blinked at her, she clarified. "Last night, when you told me to have him killed and then ran away."
"Oh."
Padme put her cup down and massaged her forehead. Somehow she had managed to forget about that, despite the fact that what she might have said to Palpatine under his influence had haunted her all morning.
It's nothing.
It's not nothing." Rabe laid a hand gently on her wrist. "Her Highness takes that sort of thing very seriously, and not just for her handmaidens. If Palpatine touched you or said anything inappropriate to you, he'll be dealt with."
Padme had to stop for a moment to consider the sheer implausibility of Palpatine actually having an interest in something besides politics and galactic domination. Only once in the past 13 years had she ever heard a rumor about Palpatine having any kind of romantic entanglement, and since the subject had been a 15-year-old Anakin Skywalker, she knew that it had to be nothing more than rumor. Supreme Chancellor or not, Obi-Wan would have killed Palpatine if he had ever laid a hand on his underage apprentice. It was almost a pity that Palpatine had never tried. It might have revealed his evil much earlier.
"No," she said quietly. "Palpatine didn't touch me or say anything inappropriate to me."
"Then what did he say?" Rabe asked. "If he's a threat to my queen, I need to know about it. You were very upset last night. And there was the bit where you told me to kill him."
Padme blinked and looked up at her, because she didn't remember saying that. But of course she didn't remember it. She couldn't remember anything that had happened.
"Did I tell him the truth?"
"It's nothing," she said again. He said something that upset me, that's all, and I overreacted." Rabe considered her.
"That was a great deal more than merely an overreaction," she said.
"Did he do something to you in your..." She hesitated, grimacing at the absurdity of the question.
"Your universe?"
"Not to me."
Padme hadn't realized until now how little she wanted to talk about any of this.
She glanced away, out towards the balcony.
"To your men?"
She blinked and turned back towards Rabe, but the question had apparently been meant in seriousness. "It's complicated. They're complicated. And they're not exactly my men." "That's not the impression I got," Rabe said, making Padme wonder how much she had heard what she had seen.
"Padme, I need you to look me in the eye and tell me that Palpatine isn't a threat to my queen. If he is, I'll take care of him. You don't have to tell me the details. Just tell me yes or no."
Padme hesitated for a long moment, seeing the deadly seriousness in Rabe's eyes. If she went after Palpatine, he would kill her. She would be expecting an overly ambitious politician, not a Sith Lord. Rabe was a good fighter, as good as Padme herself, but only a Jedi Knight would be a match for a Sith Lord. Padme couldn't be responsible for her death.
"And Palpatine wasn't a threat to Amidala specifically. He was a threat to the entire galaxy."
"No," she said, and was profoundly grateful that the past 6 years arguing in the Galactic Senate had given her the ability to lie with a straight face.
"No, Palpatine isn't a threat to the Queen."
Dooku dropped his head into his hands, resting his elbows on his desk. In front of him, the hologram he had just received from the Gaius space station glimmered blue, showing in endless repeat the destruction of the Republic and Trade Federation flotilla at the hands of the Naboo First Fleet. To either side of the hologram hung virtual windows showing the details of the Republic losses and the makeup of the Naboo fleet, as noted by the sensors on the Republic escape pods and the space station satellites. At the moment, Dooku didn't particularly want to look at either. Both were equally dismal as far as he was concerned. Naval Fleet Command had already detoured a task force from another flotilla to pick up the survivors that had been recovered by the space station. They would go through the battlefield, looking for anything that might have been overlooked by the search and rescue teams, or left behind by the Naboo fleet. But Dooku didn't expect to find much. The Naboo fleet was too professional for that. And they had lingered long enough in the system to make their size and capability known, as though the complete and utter destruction of the flotilla hadn't shown that. There were thousands of survivors in the hundreds of escape pods, but the largest piece of wreckage was no bigger than a human hand. Billions of credits of losses, both for the Trade Federation and for the Republic. Worse than the loss of life and warships was the loss of the prisoners the flotilla had been carrying. The highest-ranking officers in the escape pods, along with the two Jedi Knights that had survived the battle, had confirmed that Resolute had been boarded, and the prisoners recovered before the flagship was destroyed. Since neither Captain Yularen nor any of the Jedi had been in the escape pods, it seemed likely that they had been taken captive by the Naboo, though for what purpose, Dooku couldn't begin to guess. He'd given up trying to guess what Queen Amidala would do after the attack on Sereno. He rubbed his hands over his face, lifting his head to look at the hologram. Federation warships exploded in miniature beneath the onslaught of the guns of the big Naboo capital ships, while the smaller destroyers and cruisers swung swiftly in amidst the flotilla ships to disable the Republic capital ships. Dooku tapped the controls to turn off the hologram, not wanting to watch it again, then stared blankly at the virtual screens. The loss of the warships was a severe blow to the Republic Navy. Fleet Command was sorting out the details now, but reverberations from the battle would be felt across the entirety of the front. It would hit Bothwai first. The Trade Federation flotilla had been on its way to reinforce the blockade there. Without those ships, there was a good chance that the Confederate Navy would break the siege. One more system lost to the Separatists, along with the entirety of the Bothan intelligence network and their colony worlds. Half a dozen systems in total. A not insubstantial bite out of the mid-rim. The other screen held reports on the Naboo First Fleet. Dooku looked at the long lists of destroyers, light and heavy cruisers, battle cruisers, And finally, the four massive battle stars that made up the largest warship fleet in the galaxy. It was the best look they had gotten in months at the First Fleet. Dooku did not find the knowledge at all reassuring. Put together, the various fleets of the Republic outgunned the Confederacy's, but no single fleet could rival the Royal Naboo Space Navy in size. Most didn't have as much experience, either. The RNSN had been actively fighting for most of the past 6 years. Dooku tapped the controls to close both windows, then reached for the comm panel on his desk, hesitating for a moment before he put in the frequency for the Jedi Temple. So far, only he and Fleet Command had heard about the battle in Gase, but the Senate was already gathered for another emergency session to discuss the attack on Sereno. One of Dooku's speechwriters was preparing the announcement. What was left of the Jedi Council deserved to hear the rest before then. He was bounced around through the temple's central communications hub before finally being passed to Tholme, who wasn't exactly the Jedi Master Dooku had been trying to get a hold of. The Jedi Spymaster eyed him without any expression that Dooku could read, his hands folded in the sleeves of his robes. "Master Tholme," Dooku said, trying not to show his surprise. "I was attempting to contact Master Gallia, or Master Mundi."
"I'm afraid they're not available at the moment, Your Excellency," Tholme said. "Nor are the other members of the High Council,"
he added, forestalling Dooku's next question. Dooku frowned. He and Tholme had known each other very well once, but that had been a long time ago. Tholme had always been more Qui-Gon's friend than his, part of a close circle of knights of roughly the same age that had also included Plo Koon, Adi Gallia, and the Dark Woman. Many of them were dead now. The lives of Jedi were difficult and dangerous. More so than ever in the years since Qui-Gon's murder, as the events of the previous day had shown. "I'm afraid the matter is urgent, Master Tholme," Dooku said. "I must insist on speaking to the High Council immediately." He glanced at the chrono on his desk and allowed his frown to deepen. "I can attend upon the temple if I must, but this cannot be delayed much longer. The Senate will know in a matter of hours, and as this concerns high-ranking members of the Order, I am sure that the Jedi would prefer to be informed before the Senate." Though if Tholme kept delaying him, he was going to reconsider that. The independence and insularity of the Jedi Order, which had struck him as so necessary in his youth as a knight and later as a master, increasingly galled him now that he was no longer in the Order. The Order was meant to support the Republic, not the other way around. It did neither them nor his office any good if they walled themselves away from the rest of the Republic, especially when they were needed. Tholme frowned back. He was a lean, craggy-faced human, with his graying hair in a leather-wrapped ponytail. At the moment, dressed in neat Jedi robes and in the familiar surroundings of the temple, he could easily have been mistaken for nothing more than a librarian or a teacher, increasingly confined to Coruscant in his old age, which humans showed far more than other species. It would have been a fatal mistake. He considered Dooku silently for a few seconds, then said,
"A moment, Your Excellency,"
and turned aside, vanishing briefly from the holoprojector's pickup field. Dooku waited, drumming his fingers impatiently on his desk, until Tholme reappeared.
"The members of the High Council are unavailable,"
he repeated. It was hard to tell, more so with Tholme than with most of the other Jedi, but Dooku thought that Tholme's frown had deepened, discomfort now in the set of his shoulders.
"You may tell me, and I will inform the Council."
Dooku briefly considered refusing, then realized that he didn't actually want to know what Tholme would do in such a situation. To say that Tholme has something of a reputation in the Jedi Order would be understating the matter. "Very well," he said. "You are aware that Master Windu's task force intercepted and recovered the Trade Federation flotilla in the Naboo system?"
"Of course."
"You are also aware of the cargo
they were carrying.
Tholm nodded, his still gray eyes focused on Dooku. Dooku could just feel the edges of him in the Force, burning hot like the banked fires of a forge.
I was informed.
As quickly and concisely as possible, Dooku gave him the short version of the report he had received from Fleet Command, seeing the Jedi Master's face grow, if possible, even more grim. His former Padawan had been on Paladin, Dooku remembered. He'd looked up Quinlan Vos's records after the holoconference, unsurprised to find that most of the details had been redacted when the Temple had released them to the Senate Archives.
I see,
Dom said when he had finished.
Thank you for bringing this to the Order before the Senate. We appreciate the heads up.
You don't seem surprised, Master Tholm, Dooku said. Is there something the Order knows that I do not?
Of course, if we knew anything, we would say so,
Tholm said smoothly.
Dooku didn't believe him for a moment, but that had more to do with Tholm's reputation than his ability to lie convincingly.
I assume you'll let us know if you find anything out, or if you're contacted by Queen Amidala. We'll recover Masters Tiplar and Tipli from Geese.
Republic naval forces are already en route to pick up the survivors and investigate the battlefield.
The Order would prefer to send its own investigators,
Tholm said, glancing sideways at one of his own displays.
One of the Knights stationed nearby will be in contact with the recovery flotilla. Unless you have any objections, of course.
Even if he had objected, the Jedi would go through with whatever they had planned anyway. The only time in recent memory that the Jedi had failed to do so, Qui-Gon Jinn had died, and Obi-Wan Kenobi had left the Order.
No objections, Dooku said. I assume that this office will be informed of anything that the Jedi find.
Of course.
There was a ping on Dooku's comm panel as an incoming message arrived. He glanced quickly at it, mildly relieved to see that it was the first draft of a speech for the Senate, and not anything more dire. I'll have Fleet Command contact the Order, he said. If you'll excuse me, Master Tholm. Tholm nodded, his face still expressionless. Dooku was reaching out to shut off the communication, as he remembered something.
The Order may want to send someone to today's Senate session, he said.
It's a closed session, but the Jedi will want a presence there. Tholm arched an eyebrow, but nodded again.
Very well,
he said. His image blinked out almost before he had finished speaking. Dooku sat in the dark for a few minutes, thinking, then reached forward and pressed the button on his comm panel for his aide's desk. When she answered, he said, "Get me the file for Operation Prodigal." "Oh, come on!" Ani Skywalker protested. "I have a salvage permit. What's Her Royal Highness going to do with a couple more dead vultures anyway? She's got to have a few hundred for her collection by now." The military cop staring him down didn't seem particularly impressed by this argument, even after Ani showed them his salvage permit. "All enemy material is the property of the Crown," said Tall, Dark, and Gorgeous, as Ani had mentally labeled the RNSF cop standing on the left. "Including the remains of these vulture droids."
"I shot them down," Ani pointed out, which even he had to admit wasn't exactly the best argument. "I should get to keep them. They're not dangerous anymore. Look at the size of the blaster holes in their heads."
"Mr. Captain." "Captain Skywalker," said short, blonde, and cranky, the RNSF cop on the right. "You can either hand the remains of these vulture droids over to us right now, or we can take them from you and throw you in prison. The court should be running again in about a week or two, and you can take up your debate about ownership with them then."
"All you're going to do with them is turn them into scrap!"
Both SFs moved their hands toward their sidearms. Ani started to do the same, and then stopped himself. He wanted the droids, but he didn't want them badly enough to get shot trying to keep them,
and he didn't have any illusions about his own ability to overcome 500,000 or so members of the Royal Naboo security forces trying to get off the planet, even if he could outdraw the two standing in front of him. And what exactly are you planning to do with a pair of shot-up Trade Federation vulture droids, Captain Skywalker? Tall, Dark, and Gorgeous inquired. I can't imagine that they'd be very useful in your business. Annie scowled at her, a little insulted by the implication. I like droids, he said. I like taking them apart and putting them back together. I've never had a chance to get my hands on a vulture before. The Federation doesn't exactly sell them on the open market. You can't even get one on the black market. Not that I'd know anything about that, obviously. Obviously, short, blonde, and cranky repeated, her expression radiating disbelief. You still have to turn those droids over to us, her partner said. We'll take custody now. Ani bit off his retort, since this argument had pretty much been over from the moment they'd shown up at his landing pad at the Central Spaceport. Or what was left of it, anyway. When the Trade Federation fleet had shown up in the system, the government had grounded all civilian space and aerospace flight. Ani had been in the cantina at the caravanserai outside the spaceport. As soon as the announcement had come over the Naboo holonet, accompanied by the usual soothing, "There is no need to panic," he'd gone back to the Twilight, because if the Trade Federation was really attacking Naboo, he wanted at least a fighting chance. He'd never gone up against warships before, but he was willing to try. At the very least, it would be a hell of a rush. He hadn't been wrong about that. Not wanting to die on the ground after the spaceport shields had failed, Ani had taken the Twilight up to kill as many vulture and hyena droids as he could. Given a choice between dying with his boots on the ground and getting shot out of the sky, he'd take the latter every time, and going by the number of other privately owned starships that had launched from the spaceport, he hadn't been the only pilot who felt that way. Ani was good. He was very, very good. And he knew it. But there had been a couple of times during the dogfight, especially before the Naboo N1s had shown up, when he had thought he'd been about to meet his maker. Having a couple of vultures to play with would have gone far towards making up for those minutes of stark terror, and the repairs he'd be unable to do anything about until he could get into the mechanic shops and feed again. For a moment, he considered trying one of his little tricks, but he'd never managed to work more than one person's mind at a time. Maybe a real Jedi could have done it, but Ani hadn't spent enough time practicing to be sure that he'd do anything except piss the SFs off even more. He never really felt the lack of formal training before. "Am I going to be compensated?" he asked, figuring it was worth a try. Short, blonde, and cranky raised an eyebrow. "For what? Those droids are property of Her Royal Highness." "I shut them down!" "So what?" Ani hissed out through his teeth, irritated. "What's Amidala going to do with all these battle droids anyway?" "Enemy material is a threat to planetary security," Tall, Dark, and Gorgeous said, which Ani assumed was code for "none of your damn business, off-worlder." "They've got holes this big in them," Ani said, moving his hands apart to indicate the distance. Neither SF looked impressed. He rolled his eyes up toward the setting sun, where there was still a thin stream of smoke coming from the direction of the downed Federation ship west of the spaceport. Ani had seen it from the air during the battle. He'd have liked to dig through it, but RNSF had a cordon up around it for the past few days and was unlikely to take it down any time in the near future. "Fine," he finally snapped, under the withering glares of the two military cops. "You guys got a loader droid, or do I have to use mine? Actually, you know what? Never mind. I'm damned if I'm letting some government droid on my ship." "Mr. Skywalker," said Short, Blonde, and Cranky. "Captain Skywalker," Ani corrected. "Mr. Skywalker," she repeated, and he rolled his eyes. "Don't get any bright ideas. The planetary defense grid is active. If you try and take off, we will shoot you out of the sky." "Yeah, I get the idea,"
Ani said, starting up the Twilight's ramp.
I saw the damn thing in action. I couldn't take off if I wanted to. My hyperdrive got busted protecting your blasted planet, and I can't get a new one until the maglev starts running again.
That isn't our fault, one of the SFs said.
Well, it ain't mine, he said over his shoulder. Hey, 3PO, he added,
blinking in the gloom of the hold while they waited for his eyes to adjust.
Wake Elby up, I need him.
3PO came tottering out of whatever nook or cranny he'd been hiding in as Ani entered the main cargo hold.
Master Ani, is there some kind of trouble? Just the blasted government, 3PO. Same as always,
Ani said, hooking his thumbs into his blaster belt.
Remind me of today if I ever get the bright idea to settle on a planet that actually has one.
One what, Master Ani?
Functioning government, Ani said. At least on Tatooine, the hot smell slate didn't interfere with anyone's business. Elby, buddy, come on.
T1 Elby, his bulk loader droid, was a pile of blue-painted limbs against the back wall. At the sound of Ani's voice, he raised his head, his single visual receptor glowing yellow as he slowly began to power up.
Ani had won him in a sabacc game while drunk, no doubt to the amusement of whoever the hell he'd won him from. He'd woken up with a hangover the next morning to find Elby dumped in front of the Twilight's loading ramp, and had basically rebuilt him from scrap. He wasn't sure there was a single original part left in Elby, let alone how old Elby had actually been before Ani had gotten his hands on him.
As Elby came slowly out to his full height, Ani said,
I need to get those vulture droids out of here. Government's confiscating them. Just leave them on the pad outside. The RNSF can take it from there.
Oh, I must admit that I'll feel much better not having them here, 3PO said immediately. Battle droids are terrible company.
You've never even met a battle droid,
Ani said, rolling his eyes as he watched Elby settle himself.
He was strong, but he moved slower than molasses, and while Ani had been able to fix his wiring, he hadn't been able to do anything about Elby's personality. Decades, maybe centuries, since Ani hadn't been able to find out when Elby's model had gone out of production, of being passed from owner to owner had taken a toll on him. Not that most loader droids were real lives of the party, anyway.
Well, I can't imagine that they'd be terribly personable, 3PO said.
Who wasn't exactly the most chipper droid Ani had ever met, either. Skywalker, what's taking so long?
One of the SFs bellowed from outside.
My droid's one of those new types. He doesn't like to move,
Ani yelled back.
Keep your shirt on. Or not,
he added, too quietly for her to hear. He didn't really feel like getting the poodoo kicked out of him by a couple of Naboo soldiers, but he wouldn't have minded the Eiffel.
They were both pretty good-looking, even if he didn't go for soldiers as a general rule.
If it hadn't been for the SFs waiting outside, he might have gone ahead and started moving the vultures himself.
Ani Skywalker might not be a Jedi, but he had picked up the trick of levitating objects pretty quickly after the first few times he'd done so by accident. It wasn't the kind of thing he advertised, except when drunk and interested in winning some creds on a bet, but it was how he'd gotten the vultures into the Twilight in the first place. He could have gotten them out of the side hold and up into the main hold. By then, Elby might actually be ready to move something for a change. Trying the trick on Naboo was the next thing to actively suicidal, though.
What's wrong with your droid?
Ani whirled to face the door, his hand falling to his blaster. The woman standing in the entrance had her back to the sun, so that at first he couldn't make out her features until she shifted, coming far enough inside the hold that he could see her face.
And her uniform.
Not just RNSF, like Dumb and Dumber out there. RNSFC. The Royal Naboo Starfighter Corps. The patch on her sleeve and the rank pins on her collar told him that she was a real flyer, too, not just a desk jockey. Ani couldn't resist a little sigh of longing. He'd give a lot to fly a real starfighter, just once.
Behavioral problems, he said,
shrugging. He's old. You not hear about the vultures too, are you? She shook her head. MPs can deal with that. I'm here on behalf of Queen Amidala. Are you the captain of the Twilight?
Captain, pilot, gunner, navigator. That's me.
He stepped forward, getting a better look at her. Tall, good-looking, with dark skin and long hair braided elaborately back from her face. Her uniform cap was tucked under her arm.
What can I do for the Starfighter Corps and Her Royal Highness?
Come and fly with us, said the part of him that was still 9 years old and dreaming of getting off Tatooine. Come and fly a Royal N1 Starfighter for the Queen of Naboo.
I take orders from exactly one person,
Anakin reminded himself, irritated that some tiny part of himself still fell over itself fawning at the feet of a starfighter jock.
Me.
The woman was studying his face, frowning.
What did you say your name was again?
I didn't. I'm Ani Skywalker. Her frown deepened.
Anakin Skywalker? Not even my mother calls me Anakin.
Ani glanced back over her shoulder at Elby, who had managed to take exactly one slow step away from his spot against the wall since the last time Ani had looked at him.
He wasn't expecting to turn back and see the RNSF officer with her blaster out and aimed at him.
The Chupa! He spat, as 3PO let out a shriek of terror.
What? Hands up, the officer ordered. Get in here and arrest this man.
She snapped at the SFs, who were already running up the ramp with their own weapons drawn.
For what?
Ani demanded. His arms jerked around behind his back as Tall, Dark, and Gorgeous snapped a pair of binders on him and relieved him of his blaster.
I haven't done anything!
Master Ani! 3PO wailed.
Oh, what's happening?
The officer pointed.
Shut these droids down. Lock this tin can up. I want guards on this loading bay immediately.
The Batha Tutu! I haven't done anything! Anakin repeated in basic this time.
I haven't... He hadn't.
Chuta, he swore, as he was manhandled off the Twilight.
Is this about him? That lock-a-dopa muskety-gaggle Jedi! I'm gonna rip his carcass face off!
The pilot had followed them out, her weapons still fixed on him.
You're under arrest, she told him,
as if Ani hadn't figured that out.
Stun him and get a bus down here, she ordered the SFs. He's going to the palace.
They look very happy, Obi-Wan said from behind her. Padme blinked and looked up, not having heard him come in. They do, don't they? She murmured, watching the hologram jump out of the corner of her eye as the image looped. Obi-Wan came around to the side of the couch and sat down beside her, studying the figures in the hollow. It wasn't a wedding hollow, but from the timestamp on it, it had probably been taken not long before Amidala and Captain Kenobi had been married. They looked young and in love. Amidala too much like Padme without her face paint. Kenobi a little shocking in civilian clothes. His expression almost transcendently happy, though Padme couldn't remember ever having seen Obi-Wan. She didn't have any hollows like that of her and Anakin. Not even one.
Where is that? Obi-Wan asked. I don't recognize it.
Padme looked back at the hollow, straight on this time.
Kiana, one of my family's estates, she said. It's up in the mountains in the northern part of the continent. There are a lot of resorts around there. It's a popular vacation spot in winter.
It sounds very pleasant.
It is. Cold, though.
Amidala and Kenobi were rosy-cheeked with it, as wrapped up in furs as they were in each other. The Vorpak, the small furry mammals that had been used as hand warmers on Naboo for time out of mind, had poked its head out of one of Amidala's pockets, waving one long leg at the holocan.
Amidala couldn't have been much older than 18.
Do you ever think... Padme cut the question off before she could finish,
glancing away from Obi-Wan as she leaned forward to close the virtual window. The hologram blinked out, leaving them in the shadows of the unlit room. Padme hadn't bothered to get up to turn the lights on after the sunset. She hadn't been expecting Obi-Wan to answer, so she was surprised when he said slowly, "Not about this." "Satine?" she asked. He nodded. "If you don't mind me asking," Padme said, cautious because she didn't know how he'd react to the question. "I've always wondered why you two never worked out." Obi-Wan leaned back against the couch, rubbing a hand over his beard. "Aside from the obvious difficulties," he said, neatly eliding the fact that he was a Jedi Master and Satine Kryes was, had been, the Duchess of Mandalore. "We weren't very good for each other. We were both very young and very stubborn, and we parted on very poor terms." He was quiet for a moment, thinking. "I suppose that I wanted her to ask me to stay, and she wanted me to offer, but neither of us ever admitted it. It worked out in the end. I think I would have been very unhappy if I had stayed on Mandalore, and we would have come to hate each other in time. We made much better friends when we met again than we did as lovers. But she never really... I don't mean to speak ill of the dead," he added quickly, looking down at his hands. Padme pulled her bare feet up onto her couch and wrapped her arms around her knees. "Tell me," she said. "I don't think Satine would mind." "I suppose she wouldn't," Obi-Wan said after a moment. "Satine never quite understood the Jedi. Most civilians don't. It's very hard for someone who has been raised outside the Order to understand what makes a Jedi." Padme stilled, wondering if he was talking about her, but Obi-Wan's gaze was elsewhere. "Satine thought, most civilians think, that going by the code is what makes a Jedi a Jedi. That we have rules and forms of conduct, and living by those, along with..." He raised one hand and wiggled his fingers, smiling self-deprecatingly. "Is what makes a Jedi a Jedi." "It isn't, of course. It goes much deeper than that." Satine never really understood that. She thought that whenever Qui-Gon or I did something contrary to her understanding of the code, of what the Jedi were, that we were betraying our principles. That's why she never quite forgave the Jedi for getting involved in the war, because she sometimes thought that peacekeeper meant pacifist. He looked down at his hands. "She was a good friend," he added quietly, "and I miss her very much. She didn't deserve what happened to her." "Very few people ever do," Padme said. "That's true," Obi-Wan said absently. "And those that do seldom get it." He plucked distractedly at the fabric of his trousers. "I am glad that Satine and I got to reconcile, even if the circumstances weren't what either of us would have preferred. And even if we were, believe it or not, even less suited to each other than we were 20 years ago." Padme hadn't realized that it had been that long, but both Obi-Wan and Satine had always been vague on how old they had been the first time they had met. "I can see that," she said slowly, and Obi-Wan nodded, looking back at the place on the coffee table where the hologram had been. "Sometimes you meet the right person, but it isn't the right time or the right place," he said. "Sometimes you meet the right person, but it will never be the right time or the right place. And sometimes you meet the right person, but you aren't the right person for them." He sighed, then shook his head.
"Did Queen Amidala show you that?"
"Rabe did," Padme said, glad for the change of subject. "It's from the Queen's personal archives.
There are some others from the occupation that she wanted me to see. The Queen... She hesitated for an instant. The Queen didn't really want to talk today. Amidala had already left the palace when Padme went to the royal suite with Rabe, on a tour of some of the areas of the city that had been worst hit by the Federation bombardment. Padme had spent the morning with Rabe, Dorme, and another handmaid named Ele, going over lists of individuals they had in common, comparing what Padme knew from her own universe with what the files from the Naboo Central Intelligence Service read. Amidala had returned, held court, sat in on a Royal Advisory Council meeting, then passed the rest of the afternoon in meetings and holoconferences before retiring. Padme had sat in one of the sitting rooms in the royal suite, playing sabacc with the other handmaidens, while they pretended not to hear Amidala weeping in her bedroom. She hadn't even let Sabe in.
"I can imagine," Obi-Wan said slowly.
"Will they really kill him?" Padme asked.
"Dooku would, but the Jedi?"
She expected an immediate denial, but instead, Obi-Wan said,
"I don't know. Anakin and I spoke to Master Koth and Master Unduli, and I don't know. A week ago, I would have said no, never. We never did that, even the days of the Old Republic. But now, I don't know."
He rubbed his hands over his face.
"I don't know. He'll have a trial, but Luminara and Eeth didn't sound entirely certain that it would be impartial.
And even if they don't kill him, compared to the other possibilities, death might be a mercy.
I wouldn't have thought that a week ago."
"Master Koth and Master Unduli believed you then," Padme said.
Obi-Wan smiled slightly.
"It took some persuading," he said. "But actually, I think it was Anakin who convinced them in the end. Apparently, Eeth Koth had a run-in with Annie Skywalker a few years ago, and it would be impossible for him to pass as a Jedi Knight. The same isn't true for Captain Kenobi. The meeting was very informative."
He hesitated.
"I start to see why Captain Kenobi left the Order, though I'm sure it wasn't as bad 12 years ago. The makeup of the Council is still essentially the same now as it was then. This Order hasn't had the casualties ours had."
"I've never really thought about that before," he said thoughtfully.
"I don't understand."
Obi-Wan rubbed a hand over his beard, thinking.
"The High Council is usually made up of masters with decades of experience," he said. "Master Yoda, for example. Though in his case, it's centuries. Mace Windu, Opo Rancisis, Yaddle, do you remember her? She died before the war began. Younger council members are usually the former Padawans of council members themselves, like Deepa Balaba or Plo Koon. Deepa was Mace's Padawan, while Plo was the Padawan of a master called Tivoka, who died about 10 years before we met. The council tends to be very traditional and very set in its ways. It's not untrue of our council, but our council is younger than it's been in millennia. Kid Fisto, Stas Ali, Aegon Kolar, and I, under normal circumstances, none of us would even be considered for the council for at least another decade, and probably closer to 2. Stas and I are very young for masters, and neither of our own masters sat the council. Several other members of the council are very unlikely to have ever been appointed, but considering the war, they are... we are," he allowed, with a faint wince. "We are more appropriate than some of the other choices. Many of the older members of the council opposed the war and the involvement of the Jedi, so conservative masters were passed over when there were openings on the council. That didn't happen in this universe."
Padme nodded. "That makes sense. I've never realized that about the Council."
Obi-Wan smiled thinly. "The Order doesn't like to air its dirty laundry," he said.
"But the same thing is true in the Senate," she finished. "Though probably to a different extent. There's been far more turnover in the past 3 years than there was in the decade preceding, even when you don't consider systems that have seceded to the Separatists. It's very difficult to sit in the Senate if you aren't, properly appreciative of the war effort.
So I've heard from Senator Organa, Obi-Wan said.
He pushed a hand back through his hair, looking troubled at the thought of Bail Organa. Bail, their Bail, who had been in the Senate building when it had blown up, was almost certainly dead. Padme hoped, glumly and gloomily and without much hope, that Bail had managed to escape somehow. But while Bail's self-preservation instinct was good, she had been on the holocom with him when the first charges had gone off. She licked her lips, trying to remember what they had been talking about before.
Master Koth and Master Unduli must have been very surprised to see Anakin.
Obi-Wan laughed, the sound only a little forced.
You've no idea. Anakin is very persuasive, though, under the right circumstances.
Don't I know it, Padme said, smiling a little to herself.
Where is Anakin, by the way? I expected you both to be here when I got back from the royal suite, but the Queen didn't tell me that she'd decided to let you off the leash.
Off the leash may be a bit of an exaggeration, Obi-Wan said, since we were under a, admittedly very discreet, guard the entire time in the form of several out-of-uniform handmaidens. How many does Her Highness have, anyway?
At least a dozen, Padme said. I haven't met all of them, and from what I've heard, several of them are off-world at the moment. He nodded.
After we finished with Luminara and Eeth, Kine and Mothier took us down to the RNSF base. We did get to talk to Captain Rex. He has been working with the units that are doing cleanup and feed.
How is he? Padme asked. I was starting to worry when we hadn't heard from him.
He seems happy, though the RNSF is very different from the Gar, Obi-Wan said, after a moment of thought. Most clones are happier with their own kind. Rex always has been. I think he's more comfortable with them than he is with us right now.
Padme winced.
I can't blame him. Did he say anything?
He considered.
Most of it we already knew, he said. Naboo integrated its security forces, clones and regulars. There aren't any all-clone or all-regular units, but the same is true in the fleet as well. That was never done in the Gar, because High Command thought it wouldn't form an effective fighting force. That, and most of the volunteer forces refused to serve with clone troopers. Rex didn't actually think it would work, but the RNSF seems to be doing pretty well. Did you know that Naboo bought the clones, not the Confederacy?
Padme's eyebrows shot up.
I didn't know that. I assumed the CIS did.
That's an enormous financial investment, especially considering that the fleet is bought and paid for, too. It can't be loans. Amidala cut ties with the banking clan almost a decade ago. I'll ask Rabe or one of the other handmaidens. It'll be very interesting to learn.
He nodded. Anakin made some friends at the RNSF C-Station and decided to stay there for the night. He was elbow-deep in a starfighter engine when I left. I don't think I've seen him that happy since...
He stopped abruptly, then said, with obvious effort,
since before Odrin.
That's good, Padme said. You didn't want to stay too?
My presence was unnecessary, he said, and gave her the ghost of a smile. And out of character, since the entire RNSF still believes I'm Captain Kenobi. I'm not sure how long that ruse will last, though.
He touched his jaw.
Mothier suggested I shave.
Did she hit Anakin again?
Anakin was very well behaved around her, so I think he learned his lesson.
Obi-Wan sighed.
I think Anakin wanted some time away from us after...
He stopped again, then put his head in his hands. Padme, startled, unfolded her legs and leaned over to put a hand on his shoulder.
Are you all right? Obi-Wan was quiet for so long that she thought he hadn't heard her. But before she could repeat the question, he said, "No. Not really. No." "What's wrong?" Padme asked, keeping her voice low. She could feel the tension in his shoulders beneath her palm, could tell that he was trembling very slightly. "Tell me, Obi-Wan. Did something happen?" "No. Yes. I don't..." She had never heard him sound so frazzled. "Obi-Wan," she said again, hearing a little bit of fear slide into her voice despite herself. "Please tell me what it is. You can't... You shouldn't keep it locked up inside yourself." Obi-Wan rubbed his hands over his face. I wish you hadn't said that this morning, about my leaving the Order. At least, not where Anakin could hear it." "I didn't know he was there," Padme said. "Why? Why is it so wrong? You care about Anakin, you love him, he has to understand that." Obi-Wan's tanned fingers dug into his gingery hair. "That's what I'm afraid of," he said, then winced again. "Why?" Padme repeated. "I don't understand what's so wrong about it." "You can't," Obi-Wan said. "You're not a Jedi. You don't... What it means, what I nearly did, what I was ready to do..." He made a short, sharp gesture with his hands. "What I was saying about Satine. Jedi don't follow the code. Jedi are the code." Padme hesitated. "That's impossible for any being to..." "Padme, it's how we're raised. It's all we know. It's all I know." He steepled his hands, pressing his forehead to his fingertips. "It's what we are. You can't make a Jedi. We're born, we're trained, we're raised, we are. The code isn't some list of rules that can just be tossed aside when we decide it doesn't suit us. It's in our bones, the way the Force is in our bones, in our souls. You cannot..." He stopped, breathing hard. "Anakin," Padme began hesitantly, not sure if bringing him up would help or not. "Anakin was not raised in the Order," Obi-Wan said. "I used to think that that made him... that was a weakness. I'm not as sure of that anymore. He understands, but it isn't... He isn't... Padme, I don't know how to explain this to someone who isn't a Jedi." "Can you try?" He ran his tongue over his teeth. "Do you know what the most dangerous being in the galaxy is?" "A Sith?" Padme said. But she already knew that that wasn't the answer. Couldn't be. Obi-Wan shook his head. "It's a Jedi Knight who's left the Order. Because a Knight who's left the Order has walked away from everything he's ever known, everything he believes, everything that he is. A Knight who leaves the Order destroys himself, because that is what the Order is, what being a Jedi is. And walking away from that, being able to walk away from that. Someone who can do that can do anything, because there's nothing left. We are Jedi. If you take that away, if you cut that out of yourself, then you're nothing. You're a hollow shell. Dooku, Deepa Balaba, Pong Krell, Aura Singh, all the Jedi that have lost themselves, that have removed themselves, they would do anything. A Jedi Knight who can leave the Order is capable of anything because there's nothing inside them anymore. There's nothing." He stopped, pressing a hand to his mouth and looking as though he was going to be sick. "Do you know what it feels like to realize that you are willing to compromise who you are, what you are, the very core of your being, for another person? For anything?" "No," Padme said. No, I don't know. But, Obi-Wan, you're not nothing. You're not just a Jedi.
Yes, I... He shook his head. It's not like that. I don't know how to explain it.
Padme laid her hand alongside his cheek, his beard bristling against her palm, and turned his head towards her. He looked at her with huge blue eyes, not making any attempt to protest. What are you afraid of, Obi-Wan? You know who you are. You know the kind of person you are. None of that has changed.
All of it has changed, Obi-Wan said.
No, it hasn't, Padme insisted. You were this person before, Obi-Wan. You aren't the kind of person who would turn into Dooku, no matter what you think. You're a good person. Nothing will ever change that, whether or not you're still a Jedi.
Obi-Wan shook his head. I am not, he said, a good person. The things I've done in this war, the choices I've made.
Obi-Wan, you are one of the kindest beings I have ever known, Padme said. And you are my friend. You love Anakin. You loved him before Odrin. Just because you've realized you're capable of making this decision doesn't make you any less the man you were before you were put in a position where you had to.
Padme, I'm not done.
She laid a finger against his lips. Do you really think, just because you love Anakin more than your vows, that you will cease being who you are? That you will turn into Count Dooku?
Ahsoka left the Order.
Do you think she'll turn into Asajj Ventress or Ara Singh?
Obi-Wan flinched.
That isn't the same. Why not?
Ahsoka left because she felt betrayed, because she was. Because our Order let her down when we should have stood behind her. I was going to leave for selfish reasons. For myself.
For Anakin, Padme reminded him.
He shook his head. For myself. I had a duty to the Republic, to the Order, and I was willing to walk away from it to chase a dream. What kind of Jedi, what kind of man does that? I was ready to betray everything I am. If Anakin hadn't been on Mustafar, I would have done it. I already burned my bridges on Coruscant before we left.
Padme caught his face between her hands, forcing him to look at her.
You were that person before you made that decision. You were that person before Odrin, before Geonosis, even before we met 13 years ago. You are not just a Jedi, Obi-Wan. Does making that decision change you? Change who you are, who you really are? No! You were always that person. And that person is a man who loves his friend, who believes in doing the right thing, who's smart enough and brave enough and strong enough to realize there's something beyond the society he was raised in. Do you know how rare that is? How exceptional it makes you?
A traitor, he whispered.
We're close enough to make no difference.
No! Do you hear what you're saying, Obi-Wan? What you're calling yourself? I know you! Anakin knows you, and you know who you really are, even without the Jedi. None of that has changed. You made a decision. That doesn't make you a different person. It doesn't make you evil, and it doesn't make you hollow. You would not have made that decision if you truly thought that the Jedi were all that mattered to you.
His expression was haunted. They should be.
They aren't, Padme said. And yes, you have to live with that. But you were living with it anyway. You're just aware of it now.
I don't know how to live with that, Obi-Wan said. I don't know if I can.
You've been doing all right so far, Padme said. She released him, seeing him blink dazedly at her. Don't let it destroy you, she said. Please. I know it's eating you up inside, but you can't let it, because you're better than that. Am I? His voice was hollow. Anyone who was truly evil would never be bothered by it, Padme said. She leaned forward, careful, and kissed him lightly on the mouth. He looked exhausted when she pulled back. What does that make me? He said. If I can live with it. Human, Padme said. That should be enough for anybody. She straightened up from the couch, hearing her back pop, and held her hand out to him. Obi-Wan looked at it in weary bemusement. I'm going to take a bath, Padme said, because I had a workout with the handmaidens today, and I want to soak. I think you should join me. Obi-Wan blinked once in slow surprise. What would you do, he said, his voice still a little raw, if I actually said yes? Padme said. I wouldn't have asked if I wasn't hoping you would. Obi-Wan looked back at her for a long moment. And then he took her hand. The empty spaces in the Convocation Chamber seemed more obvious today than they had at any point in the last 3 years. Dooku took them in as the Supreme Chancellor's podium rose up into the center of the chamber, letting his gaze flicker around the massive room. He could feel the tension in the Force, had been feeling it for hours now, ever since news of Sereno and Gase had leaked out to members of the Senate. Dooku didn't know how they had found out, and didn't particularly care in his current mood, but he had people looking into it anyway. The low rumble of conversation increased as the podium settled into place, and Dooku stood up. One of the repulsor pods from a lower level of the northern bank immediately shot forwards into the floor, the senator from Mandalore pounding his fist on the speaker control. I move for... Dooku's vice chair rapped her staff of office sharply on the floor of the podium, the sound echoing through the rotunda. Silence! Under her chilling glare, Tal Merrick stopped before he could blurt out what had undoubtedly been meant to be a vote of no confidence. After a moment, he returned his repulsor pod to its cradle. Dooku waited until the last whispers had quieted, then said, This is a closed session. Anything discussed in this chamber will remain in this chamber. Speaking of anything that has been discussed in this chamber outside these walls will result in arrest for treason and espionage. No part of this session will be broadcast to the public. If anyone in this chamber is incapable or unwilling to comply with this, then they may leave immediately. There was another rustle of whispered conversation. Dooku waited for several moments, but no one left. The threat wouldn't stop anyone really determined, of course, and it would certainly have no effect on any Confederate or Alliance collaborators who had, for whatever reason, decided to remain in the Republic. But it had at least gotten the attention of the Senate. By now, I'm sure that most of you have heard about the terrible events in the Sereno and Gaze systems, Dooku said, after the requisite amount of time had passed. For those that haven't, 50 hours ago, military forces of the Naboo system and the Confederacy of Independent Systems launched attacks on the Sereno system, destroying all military and industrial sites in the system and killing thousands. 27 hours ago, the Naboo First Fleet ambushed a Republic military convoy in the Gaze system and completely destroyed all vessels, as well as taking prisoner a number of important Republic military officers and Viceroy Newt Gunray of the Trade Federation. No need to mention Mail Organa, Obi-Wan Kenobi, or the Jedi just yet. In the past, the Confederacy of Independent Systems has waited for Republic security forces to make the first move. This new aggressiveness on the part of Queen Amidala marks a turning point in the war. This Republic cannot afford to wait and act only in response to the Confederacy's aggression, now that Naboo has proven itself willing to launch attacks without provocation. Fortunately, the Trade Federation's bombardment of Naboo wasn't widely known, though Dooku wasn't certain how that secret had managed to be kept. As the events of the past few years have proven, a drawn-out conflict will be economically deleterious both to the Republic and to the Separatist states. The longer this conflict continues, the greater the threat to the stability of this Republic. The empty spaces in the Convocation Chamber were more than enough evidence of that. Past events have shown that Queen Amidala and the Naboo system are the keystones of the Confederacy, Dooku continued. Without Amidala, Naboo's resources, or the Naboo military forces, the Confederacy will be crippled. There was a murmur of agreement from the Senate. He had everyone's attention now, politicians and their retinues leaning forward to listen to him. In the Force, he could feel their interest, as well as their bloodthirst. No one in this chamber would be getting their own hands dirty, but that didn't mean they didn't want blood for blood. My advisors assure me that the combined Republic military forces are capable of taking the Naboo system and bringing it back under Republic control. We can end this war before it goes any further and before any more lives are lost. Plans for a coordinated invasion of the Naboo system were made several years ago and are, according to our agents in the Confederacy, still valid. If we move without delay, we can take Naboo and the Confederacy by surprise with one swift, bold stroke. I ask, on behalf of the people of the Galactic Republic, that the Senate approve this invasion. Let us bring an end to this war. Let us bring an end to Queen Amidala and to the Confederacy of Independent Systems. Dooku could feel their agreement in the Force, even before the cheers began.